We approach looking at more of a video component and not a still image. Iowa State went the still image route. Well, to this day, we still use the still image. We use a single image. We freeze it and we estimate ribeye area, change the angle of the probe, and then we get five more images and we call it intramuscular fat. And that's been steadfast since about 1995. It's funny how the thing changes. We here at WT are now working back what I started in the 1990s. We're trying to get it back to video imaging because with AI, I just know that we can be more accurate, more repeatable by changing this technology.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Lalamond Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brandy Buzzard, and it's my pleasure to bring you the latest trends and issues from the best and brightest minds in the beef industry. Today, we are joined by Dr. Tommy Perkins, Associate Professor and Dean Hawkins Chair for Cow-Calf Management at West Texas A&M University. Dr. Perkins earned his master's degree at West Texas A&M and his PhD in animal breeding from Texas Tech University. He has had a long career in the beef industry, including both academia and industry trade associations. I'm looking forward to speaking with him today about all things ultrasound technology. So without further ado, Dr. Perkins, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Well, very good, and thanks for the opportunity. I sure appreciate the opportunity to share about my career in ultrasound technology.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to hear about it and have you here. But to start off with, I talked a little bit about your background, a very, very small amount. So just to get started, if you want to bring us up to speed on your background, how you got started in the beef industry and cattle industry and kind of your career so far.
Yeah, I grew up in a small town in the Texas Panhandle. So when I came back to West Texas A&M University, it was really a coming home for me and getting close to a family. I've got two degrees from West Texas A&M University, one in ag economics, and really the other was kind of a general ag degree. And then I went on to Texas Tech University and received a PhD there. Most would know my major advisor, Dr. Ronnie Green, who had been at UNL and USDA and, you know, did a lot of things. But he was my major advisor for my PhD program. And I did spend some time with the Extension Service. I did spend 7 years as a county agent and love that. I love the kids, those kind of things, but I sure hated all those night meetings that I would have had. And I moved on from there, and, you know, I went to my first job out of tech was at Texas State University, a smaller ag school. And I stayed there about 6 years and moved on to Missouri because I always thought I'd want to be a department head or administrator at some university someday. I've since changed that thought process for sure, but I did go to Missouri State University in Springfield, Missouri. Spent, nearly 14 years there. And just by chance, I get one of my students says, hey, there's a job opening at Beefmaster Breeders United. We'd really love you to apply for that. And I'm thinking, man, I'm a full professor, tenured. I love my job. I love what I'm doing. I love the jury. But Nolan Ryan was going to be the chair of the search committee. And I was thinking, my granddad's going to be like, this is so cool. I'm going to get to meet Nolan Ryan. Well, of course, I apply for the job. I get an interview. And Nolan Ryan was there, and I got to meet him, which was way cool, you know. So, and they did offer me the job, and that was one of the biggest decisions I ever make in my life, you know, to quit academia where you're a tenured full professor, and you move into a job you could lose, you know, with one vote from a board of directors.
Yes.
So, which I think you have a little time with the Breed Association work as well, so.
Yeah, I do.
I love my time with Breed Association, but I pity anybody that works there because that's a tough job. Any breed association, to be honest with you.
It is a tough job. I was with Red Angus, the Red Angus Association of America, for about a little over seven years. And I really enjoyed that. I loved working with the breeders and the commercial producers. I really liked it, but you're right. It is a tough job. And, so yeah, it's if you haven't been, if you haven't been in one and worked in one, it's kind of hard to explain, but you have. So yeah, but that's, I did not get to meet Nolan. We didn't have a Nolan Ryan on my interview. So.
And that is a great organization. You know, that is a very heavy on the membership side of it, and a little less on the cattle side of it, but gosh, just great members. And I enjoyed that 5 years of working with Beef Masters and getting into the industry, because I really, as I tell students today, I learned so much from the breed associations and the industry that I feel like I'm a better professor today. I think I bring more to the classroom because of that time that I had at Beef Master for 5 years and then International Breeding Speeders for about 5.5 years. So I appreciate all the time, those 11 years I had in organizations, that breed organization, because it was really good for me.
Well, and like every experience you have, like builds into the next one and you take those skills. And so it's not often that I have a guest. I don't know everybody that Dr. Molnick's interviews, but it's not often we have a guest that has worked in industry and in academia. And I can imagine that the skills you learned in those two things have overlapped and been very helpful. And then, so from Beef Master, then where'd you go after that? Straight to WT, or was there anything?
No, from Beef Master that I was approached by International Breeding Speeders Association. And I moved from basically a competitor, as Beef Master would think Brangus is a competitor. I moved over to them and very, two very different breed associations, I will say. Both good cattle, both good people, but very much different. I found that in the Brangus Association, more of those folks are there and made a living out of the cattle. And Beef Master, not all of the folks there were, or not a high percentage of cattle making a living in the cattle business, per se. So two different associations, but again, a wealth of information for me to pass on to students now.
And so how did they get you out of industry and get you back to WT?
Well, first they had to convince my wife that I was going to move to the Texas Panhandle, because the first time they asked about this, she says, no, we're not leaving San Antonio, moving to Texas Panhandle. The wind blows. But the second attempt, they called and it was just too good of an opportunity. An endowed cow-calf chair position named after a college roommate of mine. And we rode bulls together, and he happened to be the dean here. Passed away too early in his life. And yeah, great opportunity to come back here and be a part of something really that is just fabulous here at West Texas A&M University. And if you haven't been here, please come to Canyon, Texas, and see what's going on in our ag department.
Well, I have been to West Texas several times, but I've never been to Canyon. I do have some friends that went to college there that I called rodeoed with at Fort Scott, and then they left and went on to WT. So I know where it is, but I have not had the privilege yet of and the pleasure of going through Canyon. But my sister-in-law and brother-in-law live in Floydada. Okay. So I know that West Texas is very large. But I tend to stick around that Lubbock, Amarillo, Hereford, Plainview area. So
yeah, Floydada is actually about 35 miles from where I grew up.
There you go.
Yeah, small world.
Yeah, yeah, it is. So, well, again, you've had a long, long career in many different areas, and like I said, it's not rare to have a long career, but it's not often that you hear someone, like you said, leaves academia when they have a tenured professor position. And so, but to come back and be able to do that and to be in the position you're in, I'm sure that's rewarding. Did they call and like offer your wife a sweet deal to get her to talk her into moving?
I don't know what happened behind the scenes, but she finally caved in and said, yeah, we're moving to the Panhandle. And 2 days ago, the wind blew here 70 miles an hour. There was the biggest dust storm and was just terrible weather here. Reminded her why she didn't really want to move back to the Panhandle, but she loves it here. And we've got kids and grandkids here, so it's been a wonderful move for us.
Is she from West Texas also?
She's actually from way southwest Texas, the Monahans, Midland, Odessa area.
Okay, gotcha.
No, I met her when I was a county agent out in Odessa, so that's how we met.
Okay, it's not like she was from Tennessee or something and then moved to Texas.
She was a local Texas girl.
Gotcha, there you go. Well, that's great. I mean, you got the kids and the grandkids there. That can help alleviate the wind. Just stay inside.
That's right.
Yeah. So we mentioned we're going to talk about ultrasound technology. And so I'm anxious to hear where you first started working with that, if that was in the breed association side, or just kind of how you got yourself into that kind of that realm.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the history of Old Sign and Me, we go back to about 1990. And Dr. Ronnie Green, which I've already mentioned, he was just one of those guys that just knew a lot of people and was not afraid to reach out. And he reached out to a gentleman called Dr. Jim Stopher. Dr. Jim Stopher is, if you look at the history of ultrasound, in the 1950s, he was the first one ever to pick up an ultrasound unit and use it on pigs and cattle. And Dr. Green decided he was going to call Dr. Stopher and bring him down from Cornell, Ithaca, New York, and he's going to train us how to ultrasound cattle. And we were going to revolutionize the cattle industry by changing marbling and ribeye size and all these things in the industry. So that was in 1990. And I'm so blessed I got to meet Dr. Stopher, and he was just so helpful to us and continued through the, you know, my career basically. So, but that changed, that set a lot of things in motion. So it would have been Texas Tech working on this longer 17 centimeter probe that could get the entire ribeye on a screen. We didn't have to split screens anymore. We were much more accurate in predicting ribeye size. And then Iowa State University, Dr. Doyle Wilson and his team, they were also working on it about the same time. So we were kind of competitors and trying to get to the next level. Mm-hmm. We approached looking at more of a video component and not a still image. Iowa State went the still image route. Well, to this day, we still use a still image. We use a single image. We freeze it and we estimate ribeye area, change the angle of the probe, and then we get five more images and we call it intramuscular fat. And that's been steadfast since about 1995. It's funny how the thing changes. We here at WT are now working back what I started in the 1990s. We're trying to get back to video imaging because with AI, I just know that we can be more accurate, more repeatable by changing this technology. And that's been one of the problems I've seen in the ultrasound industry. They have not progressed at a rate I think we should have. We've done a great service to the industry, but I wish we would move ahead with AI technology, some of those kind of things.
At the beginning, when you started working with a professor from Cornell, who I apologize, I can't remember his name. How did this need present itself? Was this like something you guys in academia were like, hey, we want to get this going? Or is there outward pressure from the beef industry that was said, hey, we need to be able to better measure our ribeye areas? You know, was it a consumer pressure? Like, or is it just, hey, this would be a really neat research thing to do? You know what I'm saying? Like, where did that pressure come from?
Well, that's a great question, because most would think that it came from the Angus Association. But the first really push we got was from the Brangus Association. Glenn Brinkman and that group, they actually contacted Kansas State and said, hey, we need to figure out, can we select seed stock bulls for ribeye size and fat thickness? So what they did, they went in and did a kind of a time, kind of serial scan to find the optimum time. The ultrasound should be at weaning, after weaning, at yearling, when they're two-year-olds. And that beginning research actually was set in motion by Kansas State and Dr. Mike Dykeman. And I don't know that we were really good in those days. We were better than just looking at the animal and calling it ribeye size. But we learned a lot of things over time from that previous, that initial research project, Dr. Dykeman. Well, that was on the ribeye size. If you move forward another 4 or 5 years, the work by Iowa State then set into motion, we need to work on intramuscular fat. And that was a push from the Angus Association. Mm-hmm. They said, we want to be able to identify breeding animals that we can determine what marbling scores they have, what ribeye sizes they have, that can be passed on to the next generation. Because how were we doing it before? We were having to basically cut their heads off, harvest those cattle. They're no longer breeding animals.
Right.
So that's the beauty of ultrasound technology. We can do it in a live animal without harvesting them.
But yeah, that is a big advantage. Did you say you worked with Dr. Dykeman at K-State? Is that what you said?
I didn't actually work with him. That was before my time. But Dr. Dykeman was the first one that did a research project using Brangus cattle with Glenn Brinkman and the Brangus Association, looking at the proper time to ultrasound yearling cattle, and they determined it was at yearling in those cattle.
Okay.
Dr. Dykeman, maybe his graduate student may have been Dr. Mark Johnson, if I remember right. Again, my history may be getting a little fuzzy here, but I think Dr. Mark Johnson, Oklahoma State, may have That may have been his project with Dr. Dykeman at Kansas State.
I haven't seen Dr. Johnson in a while, but I remember he was at Texas Tech for a bit when one of my best friends went to Texas Tech for her master's degree, and I'm pretty sure she worked under Dr. Johnson. But Dr. Dykeman was at K-State, like when I was still at K-State, so it's just a small world to hear that name come up on the podcast. So, so you were talking about the purebred, like Angus Association. And you worked at the breed associations and led them. And I remember when I was working at Red Angus and I was revamping and relaunching and kind of building a new website. And part of the website was like the list of partners or something like that, like ultrasound partners and things like that. So, you know, there's approved for our audience who doesn't know this, there are ultrasound technicians that are approved to work and collect data for breed associations. And so how does one get certified to collect data for a breed association?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we do have we've had several organizations over time, but we've landed on the Ultrasound Guidelines Council, UGC is what they're called. And they're basically monitored by the Beef Breeds Council. A lot would know members of the Beef Breeds Council. They're execs from all the different breed associations. They guide that group and they put up different certification parameters that a technician has to own their equipment, have to scan a set of cattle, and be within a certain range, whether that be ribeye size or percentage muscular fat, on a live animal that we harvest immediately after that. And we compare the ultrasound call versus the harvest call. And you've got to be precise and accurate and repeatable, basically. So fortunately, since I came to WT, we have hosted the last three ultrasound certification processes right here in WT. We typically, UGC hosts that one time per year, in most years anyway. Folks come from all over. We have folks from Canada, Brazil, Mexico, all over the United States. There's about 130 certified field technicians that can go out and scan cattle under UGC's guidance. There's three certified labs at this time. There used to be four. But there are now three certified laboratories, one in Iowa, one in Colorado, one in Arkansas, that can actually interpret those images and send data to breed associations for analysis. Which is, again, most people don't realize that as technicians, I'm a certified technician, every 2 years I have to get recertified. You know, you would hope that would last 5 years or 7 years, but every 2 years we have to go back and get recertified, which, a technician that's scanned as many as I have, you feel like, well, maybe we shouldn't have to go back that often. But those are things that will be tweaked over time, I suppose.
But that must be, that could be reassuring to someone, we're a purebred operation. So that can be reassuring to know that the person who is the technician that's coming hasn't, been updated on procedures or guidelines for 15 years or something like that. So it's a nice reassurance for those of us using the service for sure.
And that's been one of the problems in recent years. Breeders, seed stock breeders have been challenging. Are we measuring what they're seeing in the carcass? I get frustrated with breeders because they want to take one technician versus another technician and compare the values. Totally different. They may be using different equipment. The most important thing is, did we rank them correct in the contemporary group? We get proper EPDs calculated. So I wish that breeders would understand more of that component and allow the technology to work, because I can promise you the technologies work, because the proof is really in the data when we see it in harvest cattle. I just looked at a report last week from CAB, and I don't hold me to these numbers, but I believe that number is about 13% prime carcasses today. And if you go back 10 years ago, it was half of that. So I can tell you right now that I feel more confident in an ultrasound value calling Marvin score in large numbers and quantities than I do in a carcass hanging there and calling that score. That's a subjective score. Ultrasound calls are extractable fat. It's not a subjective score. Okay, so if I'm doing that, I want to make change in the seed stock industry, I think ultrasound is better. One, it costs less, because you got to harvest a lot of cattle per sire that's hanging in a carcass to get equal value to that ultrasound data. So But you just think about the select in 2000, don't hold these dates, but about 2006, I believe it was, we probably had the lowest number of prime, highest number of select, and the choice kind of fell in between there. That would occur in about 2006. Ultrasound became very prominent about that time, 2005, 2006. So then you move 20 years to today, and now we have very few select carcasses. We have a lot of choice carcasses, and now we're up about 13% in prime carcasses. So again, it tells me the ultrasound technology, selecting all of those bulls, breeding sires that went into commercial herds, we were probably sorting those bulls accurately, and breeders were buying high marbling bulls to put on their commercial cows. And then we see that in the packing plan.
And so you mentioned you said the word proof a little bit earlier. And so I want to get to that proof. You know, we have the proof from the prime being at roughly 13%, and select is, when I worked at Red Angus, there was a report that we put out that select grade beef was kind of phasing itself out, that, you know, producers were not pursuing that, and they were pursuing genetics that phase that out. But what proof do we have as an industry that ultrasound technology has been a success for, you know, beef consumers?
That's an easy one, because when I tell students today, and I'm not going to pick on the pork industry, but I'll pick on the pork industry a little bit.
Tell my husband. My husband works in the swine industry. He's a cattle rancher, but works in the pig industry. So don't listen to this episode, Hyatt.
So if you go and you purchase a pork chop today at your local grocery store, it reminds me of what beef was like probably in the 1990s and early 2000s. Low marbling, cooked 2 seconds too long. It's much tougher, and it's very dry. So it makes me, because I can remember when I was a kid, I loved the pork chop. It had flavor, it's juicy, it had marbling in it. And now that protein to me has been replaced by this more expensive, but higher quality, more marbling, juicier, more tender, flavorful beef. People are willing to pay a little more for that quality. And we see that, again, protein beef being purchased as a protein source is increasing and has been for the last 20 years.
So what value has ultrasound returned to producers? Like, is there a tangible amount that can be credited to ultrasound? And I'm asking you, I didn't give you warning. I was going to ask this question for numbers, but is there a tangible amount you can credit to ultrasound, or is it just more ancillary in terms of like beef demand continues to increase?
Well, on the consumer side, they're buying more, a better product, but on the producer side, I think they get rewarded in those premiums and that might be a branded product like a CAB product. They're getting it for that additional margin if they're getting there. So whether that's a branded product or a commodity, it doesn't matter. We still see a difference in select and choice product between choice, average choice, or prime product. So they get those premiums in pounds of beef that they sell with more margin. Now then, the other side of that coin is, did we push that envelope so hard, increase ribeye size so much that now we've increased our carcass weights as well? Because as you increase ribeye size, the body is going to be bigger. Okay, so ribeye size is bigger, carcass weights are bigger, therefore the producer sells more pounds, nets more dollars. So there we've rewarded the producer, in my opinion.
Well, that chain makes perfect sense. And so thank you for, you know, outlining that. You mentioned a little bit on this earlier, but you were talking about how it's been a single image for quite some time. The ultrasound has been. Is there anything, I think that you mentioned that you were trying to work on this, but I can't remember. But what's happening? Is there any work to improve ultrasound hardware or software that will further affect or improve beef carcass quality?
Yeah, just by chance, all of the old equipment we used to use, the Alokas, they are no longer made. You can't buy parts for them. So they've had to phase those out and move into new technology. So
yeah,
we were forced to do it. Okay. And that's the scary, I hate to say that, but we were forced to do it. So now we're looking at new technologies, and those technologies are an improvement over old technology, but they're not where I think they should be. I was at NCBA, 3 weeks ago and met with I believe it's MEQ out of Australia, and they're taking the next level, in my opinion. They're actually taking the same ultrasound unit we're using. Instead of a still image, they're using a video, a 10 to 15 second video.
Okay.
And it's going through and bruising maybe through three ribs. And I think it's going to be more repeatable and more active on intramuscular fat, and probably so on ribeye. It's a little, it's a little more heavy. It's bulkier. I don't like that part of it. But from that, I think we'll learn that we can use a single ribeye image instead of turning it two different ways that you always see us turn it. We do the ribeye and we try to get by this. I think we're going to see video images of a single slice through the last two ribs and a 10, 12 second video. And it's going to be much more predictive of marbling, ribeye size, and fat. And we can do it a lot faster. If you've got one image versus taking 10 images, we've got to be faster and more efficient doing that.
Yeah, that just, I mean, that cuts down on your time and makes your return on investment even quicker. So, well, I will admit, when I was first prepping for this episode, I saw ultrasound. And before I got too far, I was like, this is perfect. We are preg checking at my house. We are preg checking in 2 days. And I was like, all the things we could talk about breeding. And then I was reading more and I said, nope, that is not the kind of ultrasound he is going to talk about. So,
I've got 10 graduate students. So in my position here, we actually go out and we preg check cows for free for producers. So I'll take students out and we use similar technologies, okay, that we use for carcass in the repro side. We go out and preg check. So I tell the producer, we're going to be accurate. We might be a little slower because I'm going to be training on a graduate student to preg check cows. So we like to pick up those 30 days to about 90 day pregnancies, and the producer wins. And we don't charge them for it. We do it free. Because
that's wonderful. Yeah.
And we travel quite a bit, so it's a neat thing. Now, that technology hasn't changed a lot either, to be honest with you. We've changed the probes a little bit, but there's some cool things coming on the horizon on repro side. There's going to be some wireless transducers coming in about, just like you see the wireless goggles being used. We're going to see transducers you put in your hand and go into a cow, I think, that may work. I've got a wireless Clarius unit I'm using right now for liver abscesses that we've been doing. Yeah. And I've tried it in the cow, but the problem is it's Bluetooth. And as soon as you go into the cow, you lose the connection.
Oh,
so
okay.
Through those kinds of things of how that's going to work. But there's some really cool wireless ultrasound technology out there that are amazing. I watched one of the podcasts, Dr. Nagaraja in Kansas State. I've been working with him and Dr. Ragu, Dr. Broadway, Dr. Hills on some beef dairy liver abscesses. And we're using a little handheld unit. It's called care unit. It's about the size of your iPhone. And we're picking up liver abscesses in these calves just left and right. The last group we actually did, I think there were 40 calves in the deal. 9 of them have abscesses. I picked out 8 out of 9 of those. I didn't get the 9th one because it's too far forward. And I also can't get beyond the 9th rib forward where that abscess really was. But there's some really neat things that we can do with ultrasound.
The technology, it just amazes me. So I like watching our vet who comes and preg checks. My husband can preg check, but he can't phase them as accurate. Like if they're under 30 days, he's like, I can't do it. But our veterinarian who uses the ultrasound, you know, he can do 45 days, 60, you know, it's wonderful. And as a purebred operation, I want to know, like, are the recips going to calve to give us an idea that these are actually the embryos they took, or is this bull bred? So that's really important for us. But I love watching him because he's got like the little screen thing, you know, that comes down, and it just boggles my mind just how that all works. And I don't understand it all the way of how it transmits, but I really enjoy, you know, watching it. So I'm sending our children to school and daycare on Friday so that I can be fully participatory and do my push cattle job and pay attention. So
that's a dirty job, but yeah, you're on the wrong end of the cow that day. So for sure.
Yes. Yeah. That is not the end of the cow that generally I would think of that wants to be. However, he does great work, and very rarely does he miss. So he comes back. We appreciate that. So
ultrasound is a great tool, whether it's on carcass or on repro side. It's a great tool to use. So.
It's time for our famous three.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virvac's new Bovigen Platinum vaccines. These four vaccines deliver quality protection against respiratory and reproductive diseases in the vaccine combinations you need to protect cattle at every life stage. Bovigen Platinum vaccines are comprehensive and safe. have consistent supply made in the United States and are backed by a 6-month guarantee in the Bovigen Platinum Protection Program. Start your platinum protection at us.verbac.com/platinum protection or contact your Verbac representative.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. So, well, we have, that is kind of the wrap up of our ultrasound discussion. But as our current or as our consistent listeners know, we always have the same questions that we ask our guests at the end of every episode. And so the first one of those, and to our listeners, I did not spring these on Dr. Perkins. He knew about these in advance, so there's no entrapment here. But what is your favorite beef or cattle related resource? It could be a website or a book. One of my favorite answers was when my guest said it was his wife, because his wife was like the genetics and kind of the cattle person. And then he does like the data and analytics and things like that. So what is your favorite beef or cattle related resource?
I would probably say my go-to, whether that's in my personal life or consulting or with students, ebeef.org. It's a website. If you go to ebeef.org, that is a group of extension geneticists. So you would have Dr. Spangler from Nebraska, Dr. Weber from Kansas State, Dr. Van Innenen from California, Dr. Decker from Missouri, Dr. Dare Bullock from Tennessee, Dr. Megan Rolf from, I think she's Kansas State also, and I may be leaving, Dr. Rowan from Tennessee. They've just got a wealth of information. Whether you need to, they've got a sire evaluation manual, for example. It's got every base you can imagine that a beef producer just getting the business needs to start, all the way to Dr. Van Innenen talking about the use of CRISPR technology and knocking out the horn gene in cattle. So I just think it's a really cool website that a lot of people can get a lot of things from. Probably generate a little bit from my work with Beef Improvement Federation, because BIF, those folks are really heavy involved in BIF. And with that said, I need to make sure everybody knows that Beef Improvement Federation convention is in Amarillo, Texas this year, June, I believe, 9 through 11, something like that. Please come to Amarillo. It'll be a great program that's hosted by the Beef Improvement Federation.
It is a wonderful, I have unfortunately not ever been able to attend, because I think last year and maybe the year before it was over 4th of July and I'm rodeoing over Cowboy Christmas. So, but it is I look at the outcomes and things and have heard from like when my colleagues at Red Angus would go, and it is a wonderful conference. And then just for our listeners, that's ebeef.org, ebeef.org. And I have followed this website for a while, but I also follow Dr. Van Innenen and Dr. Decker on Twitter. I love what they share. And we've had, when I worked at Red Angus, Dr. Decker and Dr. Weber both were wonderful resources and still are wonderful partners for Red Angus, whether it be genetics or economics, things like that. So just wonderful. There's a wealth of information on that website. So that's wonderful. And I put that in the show notes so that you could see that if you're driving and want to look it up later. That is in the show notes. So that's a first. I've never had that resource listed. So that's good. On the flip side, what is your favorite non-beef or cattle-related book or one that you're currently reading?
That's a tough one, because I don't read a lot that's not to do with a cow or a horse. But I do have friends in Missouri, almost like a second mom and dad, that did send me a book recently called The Wisdom of the Bullfrog, written by an admiral from the Navy on how to become a great leader. So The Wisdom of the Bullfrog is the name of that book. And it's he's a retired Navy admiral, and it's a really good read, easy read if you want to pick up some leadership skills.
That sounds very interesting. It's 300 pages, so it's not a one night read, but it sounds very worthwhile. So I'm going to write that one down for myself as well. I have a list of the books that guests have said that I keep. So yeah.
They actually had the author sign it and they gifted that to me. So.
Oh, that's a very sweet gift. That's wonderful.
Pretty neat.
That makes it more meaning, you know, adds an extra layer of meaning to it as well. Okay. And so the last one is, when you think of someone you admire or look up to, what is a characteristic that person possesses that has led them to be successful?
Probably the thing I tell my students all the time, you don't have to be the brightest one in the room. You do not have to be the most intelligent, but you have to be the hardest worker. I think those that have the work ethic along with the knowledge and experience, I think, become great leaders. But I think those that's, and President Trump, for example, and that guy has more work ethic than anybody I know. And I think that that is a common trait for people that I know, even names I've mentioned in this podcast, like a Dr. Green. You can't outwork him. I mean, that guy has work ethic like nobody's business. And I think that's what separates a lot of leaders from others. Not that they were the smartest one in the room, even though Dr. Green would be the smartest one in the room probably, but he also had work ethic. So I think that combination makes a great leader.
Yeah, work ethic. I mean, I'm a big NFL. I'm just a big sports fanatic. And you talk to people and the people are successful. They are working endlessly at their craft. Same in the rodeo world. That you're working endlessly. It's a all consuming thing. So yes, work ethic for sure.
Exactly.
Well, that is all the questions we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Beef Podcast, Dr. Perkins. If listeners have questions for you or want to learn more about our discussion today, where can they do that?
Definitely email me. That's probably the easiest way. tperkins@wtanu.edu. tperkins@wtanu.edu. That's probably the easiest way to get in contact with me.
So if you would like to reach out to him, you can do that. Thank you again, Dr. Perkins, for your time. Really appreciate being here. And to our audience, thank you for tuning in. And we will see you back here next week on the Beef Podcast.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.